නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ ඒකායනෝ අයම් භික්කවේ මග්ගෝ සත්තානං විසුද්ධියා ශෝක පරිද්දවානං සමතික්කමාය දුක්ඛ දෝමනස්සානං අත්ථගමාය ඥායස්ස අධිගමාය නිබ්බානස්ස සච්චිකිරියාය යදිදං චත්තාරෝ සතිපට්ඨානාති. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta in this section these days. And Satipatthana Sutta is quite important because we as practitioners, it gives us a lot of guidance, and especially for mindfulness practice. And it is therefore well respected and well accepted as the one of the most important and the well resourceful sutta available in the Majjhima Nikaya as well as in the Digha Nikaya. Now, as we can see from the diagram, it has mainly four sections: Kayanupassana, that is to deal with the body as a way of establishing mindfulness and improving mindfulness, and then using Vedana, the feelings, to establish mindfulness and to develop various insights, and then to use the mind states to establish mindfulness as well as to develop insight, wisdom, and then Dhammanupassana, the mindfulness on various phenomena, so that we can further improve mindfulness, clear comprehension, wisdom, and even the teaching of the Paticchasamuppada, the dependent origination. Now, currently we are dealing in the Dhammanupassana section, and we already discussed Nivarana, that is the hindrances, how one can use hindrances to develop mindfulness as well as to develop insights. And then we have moved to aggregates, khanda, where our whole experience is divided into five groups. And by properly understanding these five groups, one can eliminate various defilements, and therefore profound understanding of these aggregates become one of the key teaching of the Buddha. And now we today going to discuss this next section, that is the ayatana. So those are the sense bases. Now, when it comes to sense bases, we need to understand now, even though we call as I, me, or you, he, she, so all these so-called person, individual, actually communicate with the outside world using various senses. So if we start with eyes, so we see various objects, sights using eyes, and then using ears we hear various sounds. Using the nose we sense various smells, odors, and then using the tongue we experience various tastes, and then using the body we experience various tangibles, tactile sensations, contact, and then using the mind we are experiencing various mental objects. So therefore, if we consider our whole experience, we can say it's a combination of all these experiences, but anyway, one at a time. But due to the rapid succession of the mind, extreme rapidity in the mind, so we can't pursue some sort of a serial kind of a situation, kind of a one after the other situation, but rather we presume that everything happens together. While looking at something, we still can hear. At the same time, probably we can smell. Again, we can sense other senses as well because of this rapidity. But in real terms, when we are seeing, we can't hear, we can't feel the taste, we can't feel the contact. But only the seeing happens. Similarly, when we hear something, we can't see, we can't smell, we can't taste. Only the hearing happens. So likewise, this senses comes to the front and they become the dominant factor while the others are in the background. But because of the rapidity of the mind, we can't perceive that sort of a phenomena. Rather, we feel that everything happens at the same time. It's very much like analogy to the present day computers, where the processor speed is very high and time sharing is happened internally within the processor architecture, so that various programs are running concurrently and each program is given some processor resource. Accordingly, it seems like, or the user feels like, many programs, applications are running at the same time. But if the machine or the laptop computer only has a single processor, and then the time sharing is the one taking care of this kind of a resource allocation. Similarly, in the mind, we have a kind of a series sort of situation where everything happens one after the other. But because of the rapidity, so we feel like we can see, we can hear, we can smell, we can taste, we can sense, and even we can know various thoughts at the same time. Now there's a beautiful sutta coming in the Indriya Samyutta, where is one prominent Brahmin. He's a scholar, and he come and ask a question from the Buddha, and he's asking that when we consider the eyes, it can only see various sights, but it can't hear sounds, it can't taste various, it can't sense various tastes, it can't sense any kind of a tangible, it can only see sights. Similarly, when we consider ears, it can only sense or it can only hear sounds, but it can't see various sights. It can't sense any kind of a kind of a smell, taste, or kind of a contact. Similarly, when we consider the tongue, it can only feel the taste, but it can't feel the sights, sounds, smells, and the other ones. When we consider the body, it can only feel the tactile sensations, tangibles, but it can't see, it can't hear, it can't smell. Similarly, it can't recognize the taste, but it can only recognize various tangibles. So this Brahmin venerable, sorry, this Brahmin called Unnaba Brahmana, so he asked from the Buddha, now there are some specific domains that these faculties are working on. Eye sound sights, ears are on the sounds, nose on the smells, tongue on the taste, and the body on the tactile sensation. So they are not mixing up together. Now they know their domain properly, and they are only working on that limited domain. They are not mixing. So who is the one ultimately going to consume all these objects or all these arammana that these senses are admitting? So this is the question that he is asking from the Buddha. Because when we see something, it does not remain in the eyes. Once we close the eyes, the function of the eyes are gone, finished. Similarly, once we hear a sound, once it is finished or end, it has gone. Similarly, if we feel kind of a odor, after a while it has gone. When we even feel a taste, assume that we wash our mouth, then all the tastes are gone. It doesn't remain in the tongue. So then this Brahmin asks, who is the one going to consume? Who is the one going to memorize? Who is the one maintaining some sort of a storage? So there the Buddha mentioned that is the mana, that is the mind ultimately going to consume everything. Whatever the sights that we see from the eyes are ultimately being sort of analyzed, recognized, accordingly memorized by the mind. Whatever the sounds that we hear through our ears does not remain at the ears, but it is being consumed, recognized, memorized by the mind. Similarly for the other faculties. So mind becomes fairly the governing body of all these sensory perceptions. Therefore, mind plays a vital role in this whole recognition. Even though the senses are important, ultimately mind is the one doing the complete interpretation. And then there's another beautiful question that this Brahmin asks, because we can understand that from the childhood till our death, so we are constantly using these senses in order to get so many objects. From the beginning of our life, we see various things. Accordingly, mind may store various things. Mind may take various signs. It is being stored and some may be forgotten. Similarly, using ears that we are listening, hearing many things. And ultimately, those are going to be stored to some extent. Similarly, through the nose, tongue, body, that we perceive a lot of objects, sensory objects, and it being stored to some extent at the mind. So we can understand, compared to a little child, an adult mind is fairly corrupted in a way, polluted, because so much of information being stored. And what is being stored is mostly the most, say, vulnerable parts. Vulnerable in the sense which are the ones mostly polluting the mind. The mind is storing the ones, it is not only the useful stuff, but even quite unnecessary stuff, harmful stuffs being stored. Now, therefore, this Brahmin asks, so what is the refuge for such a mind? Then Buddha gives a very interesting answer, telling mindfulness is the refuge for such a mind. Manasako Brahmana Sati Patisaranti. For such a mind, which is already polluted, already corrupted, the mindfulness is the refuge. Now, in this context, we can understand even though senses are working, so mind plays a vital role, and what we perceive is therefore fairly colored by the influence coming from our past experience. Say, for example, you have a kind of relationship with someone, and assume that the relationship has broken. After a couple of years, suppose this person being accidentally met while on the road or wherever it is. Now immediately, once you see this person and you recognize, and all those past memories come to the front and color your experience. And you may project a lot of preconceived ideas onto the experience. How he or she has behaved, how he or she has sort of, say, looked down you, or what are the sort of difficult times you had, and what is the kind of agony that you went through. So likewise, so many things were there, and you have fairly accumulated a lot of things, added a lot of things, constructed a lot of things, and at the very moment that you see this person, and all those preconceived ideas come into the front, and we are projecting that to the present experience. So we can understand, therefore, even though we see, it is not a kind of a pure sight that we are seeing. There's a fair amount of projected information, projected bias information is there in the experience. Similarly, when we hear something, it is not a pure sound that we are listening. We are adding so much of our own stuff to that listening. Similarly, when we are smelling, say, incense or any kind of a smell, odor, so there are also the same situation. We are projecting so much of preconceived ideas, our own bias or likes and dislikes into the picture. When we are tasting something, similarly, we are projecting our own stuff to the picture. And when we are going through some sort of a contact through the body, same situation. And even when the mind itself is projecting, or rather experiencing, some mental object, so that also being constructed, further interpreted, further colored by our own preconceived ideas. Now, therefore, the whole experience becomes quite complicated. It's very difficult to analyze what is my own addition, construction, projection, and what is the pure experience. So therefore, we can say, when we analyze an experience, so it has something, the pure part coming from the object, that we can say as the objective influence, And at the same time, there is a significant part that we are projecting onto the experience that is coming from our preconceived ideas that we can say as the subjective influence. So therefore, the experience we can say has two components, the objective influence as well as the subjective influence. Now, if one is capable of understanding this situation, then we can actually entangle the whole picture rather than becoming a victim of this, particularly in the subjective experience, subjective influence. The subjective influence is the one actually really coloring the whole experience, really conditioning the whole experience so that we can't see the real picture. We can't see the reality. Say, for example, we constantly have an idea that things are sort of permanent. It lasts for a long time. So whenever we perceive something, we are looking at it, looking or experiencing it with the perception of permanence. Similarly, we expect some satisfaction, some happiness from the sensory impingements, sensory experience, and similarly, therefore, constant expectation coming as a kind of this experience may give me happiness using these sights, sounds, smells, taste, tangibles, I may get happiness. So that is a kind of a constant expectation we are always adding to the picture. And we feel that we also have kind of a governability, kind of a control to this experience. Therefore, we expect some kind of a control that things are under my control, and therefore I can manage it, I can handle it, I can manipulate it. So this kind of a projection is also there. And also, we always feel that I am experiencing, I am the one listening, I am the one seeing, I am the one tasting, I am the one smelling, I am the one feeling, I am the one thinking. So we are adding even a person, an individual, so-called I, into the picture. Now the whole experience become further complicated. So there is an experiencer. So there is a person who is experiencing. That is the experiencer. Now, experiencer is experiencing something outside. So, this is the typical grammar that we are learning. Now, from our childhood, we are going to the college and we are learning according to this context. There is an experiencer, and that experiencer is experiencing something external. So, constantly, our minds are being conditioned, colored, thinking that there is a person, there is an experiencer, there is I. Assume that how many times that we have gone through this. From our childhood, we are teaching this to our children, and we ourselves have done that. And therefore, ultimately, we can't understand the true picture, and you always think, okay, I am the one perceiving, I am the one listening. I am the one seeing, I am the one experiencing. There is I. There is a person internally. There is a person inside. There is a soul inside. So ultimately, we are trapped in this soul view, self view, personality view. Because from our this all typical, this conventional world, we are sort of reinforcing this self view. We are reinforcing this personality view. Now, how to overcome this? How to unentangle this? How to remove this confusion, complication? So that is where the meditation, mindfulness meditation is quite important, and especially the vipassana helps us to unentangle this problem. Now, if one is capable of keeping one's attention constantly on the senses, then when the eyes are in operation, we can recognize at least to some extent how this recognition happens. How eyes have recognized kind of a sign, kind of an object, a sight. And then what is our addition? Because of this experience, what are the new defilements being arisen in our mind? How I get entangled in the picture? How I get sort of assume that there was no any kind of a defilement in the mind. Mind was so peaceful. calm, but because of this sight, now immediately there's a kind of a attachment arise in the mind. Now mind become again shackled. Mind got an shackled in the experience, shackled in that sight. Similarly, assume that the mind was quite calm, clear, unattached, but we have listened to some song. It's a very beautiful song. So immediately mind get attached to that song. So there's a kind of an attachment arising in the mind. There's kind of a inclination arising in the mind. Kind of a entanglement, shackling happens in the mind. Similarly, assume there is a very beautiful smell, fragrance, and immediately we attach to it. So the mind go and immediately trying to hold it, trying to grasp it. So we can see immediately when the sensory experience happen, so mind not only adds its own sort of biases, likes and dislikes, projections, but it also gets shackled in the experience. It becomes hooked up with the experience. So this is the point that Buddha highlights in this Ayatana Pabba, where Buddha asks us to recognize the operation of various sense bases and the corresponding objects. And at the same time, he asks us to see the shackling part, the defilement or the engagement, the attachment happens after this impingement. So therefore Buddha mentions, Chakkuncha pajanati, rupecha pajanati, yancha tadubhayam paticca uppajjati sanyojanam tancha pajanati. Now, one has to recognize the operation of the eye, similarly the sight, and once it comes in contact, what is the arisen defilement? What is the arisen sanyojana, fetter? So that also has to be recognized. Similarly, one has to recognize or be alert on the ears whenever a sound impinges, and what is the experience? How the mind contribute? And importantly, what is the attachment arisen in the mind? How mind get engaged in the experience? How again mind go and shifted to that sound? We have lost the present moment. We are now involved. The mind is involved. Mind being shackled. So Buddha asks us to see this shackling nature, the attaching nature, the entanglement, engagement, bondage happens in the mind. Similarly, Buddha mentions, say one has to know the nose and the smells. And once they comes together, what is the newly generated defilement, newly generated attachment, bondage, grasping in the mind? Similarly, one needs to be alert on the tongue, and whenever we are experiencing some taste, how the mind reacts, what is the attachment arising in the mind, how you feel with it, how the shackling happens in the mind. And similarly, when you are going through some sort of a bodily experience, say experiencing some sort of a contact, at the same time there could be a possibility of arising an attachment, asking some more. I want it more. I want to have it. I want to own it, possess it. And I want to keep it for a long time. I want to experience it more and more. Or even I want to get rid of it. I want to get rid of it quickly. Assume that you are experiencing some pain. So immediately I want to get rid of it. So there are so many defilements. Subtle defilements are being generated. And more our mindfulness is improved, sharp, then we can recognize these defilements. Similarly, when the mind itself is recognizing some mental object, there could be a possibility of arising of a fetter. So this fetter has to be recognized. And at the same time, Buddha mentioned, once this previously the mind was clean, clear, and very simple, unattached, and spacious, but now because of this sense impingement, there's a newly generated defilement, newly generated fetter. So this fetter has to be recognized. So the arising part of this fetter has to be recognized. Yatacha anuppannassa sanyojanassa upado hoti tancha pajanati. Now, you are recognizing now the arising of the fetter. It was not there. Mind was clean. Mind was with a very spacious, calm, equanimous mood. But now, because of the impingement of this eye with a sight, now you can recognize, okay, there is a fetter arising. There is a defilement arising. There is a desire arising in the mind. Now, you are recognizing very honestly, very humbly, you are recognizing the arising of this defilement, arising of this desire. And assume that you are able to look at it properly. So you have established mindfulness. You are able to step back and watch it. Now you are not a victim of this experience. You are not sort of driven by the experience. But now you have recognized, okay, there is a defilement arising. So there the eye and the sights are being sort of in contact, but now there is a defilement arising in the mind. Now, so you are vigilant about that defilement. You are aware of that defilement. You are able to step back and watch that defilement. As a result, what happens? Now you are not driven by defilement. You are driven by that defilement. You are no more a victim of that defilement. Rather, you are able to recognize that defilement as it is. Now, there is no way for that defilement to further grow because of your this wise attention, because of this clear recognition, clear knowing. There is no way that defilement can further improve or grow. As a result, now it starts to fade away. So therefore, that fading away part also Buddha asks us to look at. Yathacha uppannassa sanyojanassa pahanang hoti tancha pajanati. So that arisen fetter is now decreasing. It is now started to fade away. It start to melt. So that also you start to see. You are fully alert, fully aware, fully diligent at the sense. And then the defilement also recognized. Mindfulness has established. You have disengaged from the process, from the experience. And you are mindfully watching what's really going on. As a result, the defilement starts to fade away. And then there's a beautiful thing happens. Since you have wisely paid attention, since you have properly analyzed it, or properly applied mindfulness into the picture, now the defilement has faded away. And for some time, now it will not arise in the future. Tancha yathacha pahinasa sanyojanasa ayatin anuppado hoti tancha pajanati. So therefore Buddha mentions, now that already sort of faded defilement, disappeared defilement will not arise for a while. Now you are again back to the equanimity. Again the mind has calmed down. Again the mind has become peaceful. Again the mind becomes spacious. And you appreciate that. You appreciate that peacefulness, calmness. And we are not sort of complaining that I feel bored, I feel monotony. Because we know there was a burning defilement, I properly addressed it, properly become mindful on it, and as a result it has faded away, it has disappeared. Now again the mind is back to normal. Mind is again back in the baseline. Mind again in the home stage, home situation. So mind is not agitated. So this has to be recognized. This also has to be recognized, has to be properly given value. Otherwise, what happens is, we feel like bored. There is nothing to agitate. Mind is in a very calm, quiet state. And if we look at it in a negative manner, thinking that I feel bored, I feel monotony, or I feel drowsy. So if we feel like that, then we are inviting for defilements. But rather, we should recognize, we should give value to this calmness, to this peacefulness, unagitated state of the mind. So this is something also very important. And then there's a beautiful conversation has happened between Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Kottita. And it is called Kottita Sutta in the Salayatana Sangyutta. There's a beautiful question asked by the Venerable Kottita from Venerable Sariputta. He asks, for the eye, is the sight a fetter? Or the other way around? For the sight, is the eye become the fetter? Then similarly he asks, and actually then the Venerable Sariputta say no. Then he asks, for the sound, is the ear becomes the fetter? Or for the ear, is the sound becomes the fetter? Then Venerable Sariputta, for both questions, he say no. Similarly, he asks, for the nose, is the odor becomes the fetter? Or for the odor, the nose becomes the fetter? And Venerable Sariputta say no. Similarly, he asks, for the tongue, is the taste become the fetter? Or for the taste, is the tongue become the fetter? And Venerable Sariputta say no. And for the body, is the tangible become the fetter? Or for the tangible, is the body become the fetter? And Venerable Sariputta say no. Similarly, for the mind, is the mental object become the fetter? Or for the mental object, the mind become the fetter? And Venerable Sariputta say no. And Venerable Mahakottita, he too become an arahant, is being an arahant, actually asking this question for our own understanding. Not that he doesn't know, he may know very well, but for the later generations to understand the Dhamma, so he's asking these questions. Then he is asking, please Bhante, could you give an example to understand this sort of perplexity? And then Venerable Sariputta gives a very beautiful and easy to understand example. And he says, now assume there is a white bull and a black bull. And they being tied up using a rope. Now whenever white bull wants to go to a one direction, since he is being bound to the black bull also has to come. Has to follow. Similarly, if the black bull is pulling to some other side, the white bull also has to follow. Then he is asking from Venerable Mahakottita, so is the black bull the fetter for, or the bondage for white bull, or is the white bull a fetter, a bondage for the black bull? And then Venerable Mahakottita say no. It is the bondage, it is the rope that is binding both together. So that is the fetter. That is the bondage. And similarly, Venerable Sariputta says, it is not that sight becomes the fetter for eyes or the eyes become the fetter for sight. Rather, there is a bondage between these two. There is a chandaraga, there is a lust, desire arising because of the impingement, and that is the fetter. That is the defilement. That is the cause. So it's a very beautiful analogy that Venerable Sariputta is showing us. So therefore, we don't need to remove all the sights. We don't need to ask all the beautiful women to go away so that we can maintain a calm mind. We don't need to ask all the handsome men to go away just we can maintain a calm mind. They may remain as it is, but we have to remove the fetter. We have to recognize the fetter. We need to recognize the defilement. And we can't simply ask everyone to switch off their radios, switch off their TVs, switch off their loudspeakers, musical centers. We can't ask like that. Rather, we need to recognize how our mind reacts. So what are the defilements arising in the mind? So that is the sort of the point. And similarly, we can't expect others to say wear well or behave well or say maintain proper demeanor so that we can maintain a calm mind, pure mind. Rather, we need to recognize how our mind reacts. So what are the defilements arising? why these defilements are arising. How can I properly attend to them? So this is how the spiritual practices come into the picture. So therefore, there's a beautiful verse in the Nibbedika Sutta, Buddha mentioned, Tithanti Chitrani Tateva Loke Atitha Dhira Vinayanti Chanda. So the all these beautiful, wonderful, attractive things remain as it is. But the wise person tame his mind, tame the defilements. He remove or uproot the defilements, the desires. So that is the approach that Buddha is taking. Now, therefore we can understand, okay, in this Salayatana section, there's a fairly wide analysis on to these senses, and we always have to be vigilant on what we are experiencing. We have to keep a guard on our eyes, keep on guard on our ears, keep on guard on our nose, tongue, body and the mind. Then only we are able to recognize the clear picture, how we are adding so much things and how our mind becoming sort of desired or attached, shackled with the experience. And this is something that we need to again and again recognize. And Buddha says this whole thing happened as a cause and effect relationship. It is not that someone come into the picture and bound us, but rather it happens as a cause and effect relationship. He mentioned that when the eye and the form or the sight comes together, there's a chakku vinyana, that the knowing part of the form, knowing part of the sight, chakku vinyana, eye consciousness. And then when things are happening all together, this is a kind of a rapid action, and we perceive like everything has come together, and now we feel the contact. Now we feel, okay, eye and sight has impinged, has come together, has contact, and now I see something. I hear, in the sense, capital I, see something. And now there's a feeling arise, and assume that it's a wonderful feeling, assume that it's a happy feeling, pleasurable feeling, and immediately we feel craving for that. We want it. I am having a desire for that now. I attached it. And now the upadana, clinging, also happens. So once clinging happens, now we completely lose the present moment. When the clinging happens, immediately our mind has shifted. Our consciousness has completely shifted to this new experience. Now we are reborn to this new experience. No more in the present moment, no more in that previous calmness, peacefulness, spaciousness. Rather, we have completely lost that world. But now we are in a new world. Assume that we are looking at a sort of a garden. So it's a very beautiful, say flowers are there, trees are there, extremely beautiful. So once we see it, even a picture, once we see it, immediately our mind generates a happy sensation, a pleasurable feeling, and we like it, we desire it, the tanha, craving, arise, and immediately we want it, we grasp it, we hold it, and assume that we are now closing our eyes, now we want to experience it fully. We are now in a different world. Now we are in a fantasy world. Now we are in a flower garden. Now our eyes are closed. We are experiencing. We are projecting so much things. We are visualizing so many things. We are even adding so many things. We are inviting our friends. We are inviting our loved ones, our fiancé. And we are in the garden, maybe singing, all so many things. Lot of fantasies. All the fabrications. Now we are enjoying that new world, fantasy world. And after a while, assume that immediately someone come and bug us, come and knock us. Hey, what are you doing? And now only we come to the senses. Now that whole fantasy world collapse.
whole imagined world collapse. Now the jara marana soka parideva dukkha domana supayasa sambhavanti. All the sorrow, lamentation, that decaying, all that sorts of suffering happens because we lost it. We were in a really wonderful fantasy world, but it has gone. It has finished. It's simply a dream. It's a simple mind projection. So likewise, Buddha mentioned that all these experiences, what we are experiencing through our senses, can be analyzed according to this Patisamuppada principle, the cause and effect relationship, the principle. So that actually gives us another very profound perspective to the picture. Now everything happens because of various causes. And we are being very quickly driven by these various stages. Say, I in contact with this sights, and the knowing part happens, and we feel that I am in contact with something, with the sight, and now it is generating a lot of pleasure, and I want it, I like it, so I desire it. Now I want it, I grasp it, I am trying to hold it, and now I am in a different world. Now I am enjoying it, I am in a different dream. So after a while, that dream also fades away. And due to some reason, it collapses. So the whole sort of imagination has gone. So therefore, we need to see, is it true for all the experiences? When we are seeing something using our eyes, is it true? When we are hearing something using our ears, is it happening to me? When I am smelling something, is it happening to me? When I am tasting say delicious food, is it happening to me? Am I closing my eyes? Say, assume that you are experiencing a very delicious chocolate. So how are you experiencing it? So assume that you are taking a bite, close your eyes, and trying to taste each bit. And in order to have it fully, in order to experience it fully, you even close your eyes. You even close the door of your room and you want to fully experience it. Fully in that tasty world, candos world. In many different ways we can see. So we are unknowingly are subjected to this sort of a situation. We are victimized to this sort of situation. We are driven by this experience. So therefore Buddha say us that look at this picture. Look at how we are driven by this experience. How we are adding to this picture and how we become entangled in the experience, how we are being shackled in the experience. And this is what Buddha asked us to look at. So with that kind of a mindfulness, with that kind of a satipatthana, therefore we can see, okay, this shackling become less and less. This entanglement become less and less. Our involvement become less and less. Our projections become less and less. Our coloring become less and less. Rather, we are able to look at something, hear something, taste something, smell something more objectively without adding so much. So then only we get the proper picture, correct perspective. Otherwise, always the experience is fairly biased. Biased with our culture, biased with our tradition, biased with our upbringing, biased with our own likes and dislikes. So it's always a biased picture that we are getting, biased experience. But properly, if we apply mindfulness and look at it properly, then only we get an unbiased picture, the full picture, total picture. So this is why this ayatana, or the sense space, or the sense bases are quite important. The mindfulness appeared, or the put on these sense bases are quite important. And I like to conclude today's sermon with that note. And now I like to open the session for questions.